Welcome to Leadership Decoded, a weekly podcast where I explore what good leadership looks like. I'm your host, David McQueen, an executive coach, speaker, and big-time student of all things leadership. My main aim is to keep the podcast long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Leadership Decoded. Between 1970 and 1972, the Stanford psychologist Walter Mischel, with other colleagues, conducted one of the most famous behavioral tests in psychology called the Marshmallow Test. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but placing a plate of treats, usually marshmallows, on a table in an otherwise empty room, children between the ages of 3 and 5 were led into this room one by one to be tested individually. Each child was told that the researchers would leave for a few minutes, and if the child could resist eating any of the treats until the researchers returned, then they could have 2 marshmallows. If the child couldn't resist the treats, they were instructed to ring a bell that would bring the researchers back to the room early, and they would only be allowed to eat 1 marshmallow. And if the researchers were not summoned by the ringing of the bell, they would then return to the room after 15 minutes. If a child rang the bell early and wanted to have a marshmallow immediately, they were more reliant on a hot system of thinking and were willing to sacrifice a bigger reward in the future, 2 marshmallows, for a smaller but immediately satisfying reward, 1 marshmallow, in the present. On the flip side, if a child waited until the end of the 15 minutes, they were more reliant on a cool system of thinking and were able to prioritize the bigger, long-term reward of 2 marshmallows over the smaller immediate reward, 1 marshmallow. In follow-up studies, Mischel surveyed the same children from the original marshmallow experiment on how they were doing as adults. Mischel saw that the children who waited longer to receive their marshmallow treats had found greater overall success in terms of higher SAT scores, better health measured by BMI, and attainment in higher education. Not only that, but the parents of those children who waited longer for their marshmallows were more likely to say that their children planned well for the future and handle stress effectively. The interesting thing about this test is how much it was used as a measure since by parents and educators to indicate how young people can measure self-control, and it can be a predictor for life outcomes for said young people. It was tried with a larger cohort, however, and there was no way of being able to replicate the outcome of this original marshmallow test. And as illuminating as it was to demonstrate delayed gratification, it was not an indicator of outcomes for teens, as there were so many factors that shaped that in terms of environment, background, family, etc. The thing about the marshmallow effect, though, as an experiment, was that it was largely responsible in my curiosity around leadership and decision making. How do leaders make decisions under pressure? And when faced with the internal pressure to satisfy stakeholders, employers, employees, and customers, how do leaders make sensible decisions? When faced with external pressures like political movements, online social activism, or having to respond with an answer to black swan events like the current pandemic, how do you decide? And so what really intrigued me about this marshmallow project, especially when I was thinking about doing this podcast, was how leaders across the board could really think about the response that they're going to have to a situation, and how were they going to be able to make a decision that they were going to be totally happy with and be able to stand by. And as I started working and building out and looking into other psychological and social behavior experiments, it got me to thinking about leadership and impulse control. Now, I'm fascinated about impulse control in leadership, as a coach and as a facilitator and just as a student of leadership. So for those of you who don't know, impulse control is the ability of leaders to resist or to delay our impulse or our drive or our temptation to act on something straight away. And actually, it's not just limited to leaders, but obviously this is a leadership podcast, but it's something that is a valuable part of a good leadership toolkit if you aspire to be one or if you already are one. And impulse control is something I love to explore around leadership capacity as a coach and as a facilitator, because you learn so much around how people handle pressure, how they manage risk, how they problem solve, and how they make decisions. So let's take it back a bit and let me share what it looks like when a leader lacks impulse control. Some of these you may recognize. Leaders and people in decision making or people who are making decisions. They may often overreact. You get a bit of information and you go off the boil. You don't really think about the impact of the decision you're making. You're just going to do it anyway. Other examples when there are leaders who don't have impulse control are when they are unpredictable or impatient. They're expecting for individuals to make decisions straight away or react to them, react to the decisions they're making, or very often they are unpredictable. So people have got no idea what pattern they are developing around decision making or pattern they're making around changing stuff. Another one may be loss of self-control. So under a situation outside of the norm, that there may be some really rash action that is being made. And I think one of the biggest things that comes out of this is that it creates an unsafe and uncomfortable work environment. If you have no idea how a leader is going to react to a situation and how they're going to respond to something outside of their control, one of the things that happens is if you have got no idea and you cannot predict what's going to happen, it becomes very unsafe. And if that person who is doing behaving in a rash way or an impulsive way attacks others, makes mistakes, it can also be very costly. And very often there are times where individuals in an organization may have made a decision without thinking through it properly. And instead of being like a chess player and thinking a few moves ahead, they're just like a checkers player and they've only gone one ahead. And that's it. That's the decision they're going to make. And so I've given you those examples of being explosive, overreactive, that you may be attacking others, getting really angry, you might be rash and impulsive, that there is not a space of psychological safety in that work environment, and obviously the cost to the organization. And you may recognize some of these traits in people that have led you, either in the past or in the present. But let's go a bit deep. Do you actually recognize any of those traits in your own leadership style? Are there times where under pressure you have not been able to handle something clearly? And so what you do is you go overboard and you go off the boil and you start to snap at individuals. And I'm not just talking about work, because this may happen in the community, it may happen in your family, it may even happen in relationships that you have, where when things have gone outside of your control, rather than you being really calm and thinking about how you're going to respond to it, you snap and you basically go for people and you essentially, let's be honest, you attack them. And it's very honest to be able to own that, because I know for myself, there have been times where I may have been tired, or there may have been a culmination of events that came together and I've had to go and make a decision and I've been really angry and I've lost my temper. And to be honest with you, I worry less about having the outburst. It's the passive aggressive side of me that I worry more about. Like if people see on my face that I look really angry and I look like I'm not approachable, then those are the individuals who are working around me. They are going to be fearful of the decisions they're going to make. They're not going to want to upset me even further. And so they're going to tiptoe around me rather than being able to have a robust conversation and challenge me on my behaviors. And I say some people, most of the people who do know me, they know how to be able to challenge me because they know that's what my leadership style is like. But I often wonder how individuals are able to navigate other leaders or people's authority when they lack impulse control. And so let me try and explain to you what it actually looks like in practice. And let me be very clear at this. Developing and maintaining impulse control is not something that can easily be done overnight. It does take time. It does take a lot of self-discovery. It takes you as a person being able to understand how you respond to other people, how people have been able to accommodate into your leadership style, and to use the common parlance, how you read the room. And so here are some examples very quickly. Impulse control is about self-restraint and control. It's about being in a space where you know that something may have happened, which can trigger a certain emotion of you, whether that's be anger, it could be loss, it could be disappointment, it could be frustration, any one of those feelings. But being in a space where impulse control shows up, you are able to have a sense of self-restraint and control. Does that mean that in a situation that goes wrong that you're always going to keep quiet and not do anything? No. This is more about being able to sit in the moment and recognize, yes, this stuff is affecting you, but being able to manage and control how you actually respond to it. Let's give you a quick example. A little while back, somebody sent an email. And for those of you who do know the work that I do, I as well as coaching, I do a lot of professional speaking. And an individual sent me an email, and in the email, they wanted me to come and speak, but then they said that they had no budget. And I responded and said, look, I'm a professional speaker, and the professional part of speaking means that I get paid to do it. I've written articles about it. I've released podcasts about it. I've done videos about it. It's out there. People know. There's no way in my head that they could not have known that this is what I did. But funnily enough, whether or not they did, I projected onto that individual while sitting down and writing an email, thinking about how I really wanted to tear them a new one, how I really wanted to be able to take them down a couple pegs. You know, why are you coming in and affecting my livelihood? What if I was going to ask you to sacrifice your salary for a month? Would you be able to do it? Why are you so stupid? Haven't you read anything that I've put out there before? And whilst I was running through all these scenarios in my mind and obviously writing down the email in drafts, I wrote it out, and then what I did is I cut it and I pasted it and I took it out of an email and I wrote it in notes. And whilst I wrote it in Apple Notes, what I was able to do is I was able to put all the kind of real strong and harsh language that I wanted to put in there. I was calling the person a silly mofo. I was going in and I was letting stuff out of my system. And I was able to write it down and write it down in notes, knowing that I would never go and put that in the actual email and send it to them. Because one of the things I realize is that when you are responding to emotionally an email, you're going to do and say a lot of things that you probably are going to regret in the morning. And I remember another situation quite recently where I was talking to a friend and I had posted some content online for which some of the person's colleagues took a bit of an affront of. They felt that there was something, a representation that I had in there that didn't align with the actual company's values, and me being able to put that out there might have created a bit of a problem. Now, I get this because I know there are lots of organizations that have social media policies, and there are people who won't respond to posts that I put up or content that I may provide on various platforms, because what they don't want to do, they don't want to be associated with it and they don't want to get fired. Something which still spooks me out, but they didn't want to get fired. And so what I've tried to do and what I continue to make an effort in doing is being very gracious and balanced about what it is that I put out. I can be very direct. I make no bones about that. Often I think it's important to have very direct and honest and open conversation. Go with candor rather than trying to butter it up just in case you think somebody may be able to get offended. But what's more important than that is making sure that if I am going to post something, whether it's online or send an email or have some kind of response online, that I write it in a medium or a draft verse that can't be sent. So when I write it in notes or when I write it in Google Docs or whatever the kind of tool that I'm actually using it, there isn't a button nearby that I can quickly go through and just click send and send it straight away. I literally would have to look at it, do my editing, copy and paste it out onto that social media platform or email, and then I'd have to sit down and think about send. Having that one moment or having that one degree away from it being something that I can do automatically with my Twitter fingers has allowed me to be able to manage a better form of impulse control. And let me not pretend that sometimes I don't want to go straight into there and really write some stuff from the bottom of my heart and really just vent my spleen. But more often than not, in practicing leadership, what I try to do is make sure I go to space so that I can recommend this to clients as well. When individuals are really pissed off or taken back by somebody sending them a really harsh or inappropriate email, I say always write it out outside of your inbox and write it somewhere that you can then copy and paste and put it on there. So that might manifest as well when you're in a meeting, a Zoom meeting at work, or even face-to-face. For those of you who are still being able to work and work near to people, this might come up face-to-face as well. When you're angry, and how do we make it that we don't respond straight away? We sit on it. you have a rule where if somebody really annoys you, you can give yourself, you know, maybe 2 to 3 hours for that thing to ride over you before you are actually able to respond. Another way of looking at this is just taking time to evaluate all the options you have before responding. There are times where individuals do have made correspondence with me, whether that be on social media or whether they've, you know, sent me a direct mail. And there are times where I have to look at all the different options as to how I can respond. What's the impact that that can have if I go straight in and I respond to that person straight away? What impact does it actually have? And I'm in a particularly fortunate position in that my work allows me to be involved with a number of senior leaders across various industries and in various companies, various household blue chip names. I'm on a first name basis with many of those individuals, and I don't take that responsibility lightly, because what it does mean is that when I am responding and when we are in dialogue, that I need to be able to evaluate my options before responding. And I mentioned just before, just now, like sometimes when I'm doing emails and what have you, one of the things I've also done as well with my PA, and she's absolutely brilliant at this, is that yes, I will write my content in a notepad, but sometimes what I will do is I will write it in the body of the email, but my PA can share my drafts and she can see what I'm going to write in there before I actually send it. So we use this wonderful tool on Apple called Spark, and Spark allows more than one of us to be able to, where possible, share the actual email and the email content. And what we can then do is we can go in there and we can review it, we can subtract, add, or modify whatever the content is before it actually goes out. And that's a really good good control of being able to have or being able to control our impulse. Another tool that I really love to share is make sure you under promise and over deliver. And how is that about impulse control? Because very often, if you've done something, and I see this a lot in high performance teams, if you've done something, you've done it at such a high standard, there's always going to be that expectation that this is what you're going to be able to push it out at. But unless you have boundaries around that, you can obviously overextend yourself. And so what I mean by that is nothing wrong with actually having a consistent level of high performance work that you push out, and that you when you are going deep and you're doing your deep dives, you make sure that you're always doing it at high consistent quality. But part of being able to do that is also about being able to eliminate distractions. What are the things that are going to kind of like get in your way that may take your way off or your focus away from really doubling down on the piece of work that you have in front of you? And here's what happens if you have that overload. Here's what happens if you don't set up those boundaries and you don't set up those lines as to where, you know, where things are drawn, is that it's very easy for you to be emotionally tipped over to the other side. And so when we under promise and over deliver, often what we're doing is we're giving ourselves a little bit of bandwidth. We're saying to somebody, look, this is what we can actually do. And then, you know, if we need to add a couple of bells and whistles at the end, then by all means, at least we're in a space where we're not overstretching ourselves and we're not having to react on the fly, because we've actually managed that whole process of developing products and services for those people who are waiting for us. We make sure that we've managed that whole process so it doesn't overwhelm us. And the last one I want to talk about is just self-awareness within your body. And I'm sure many of you listening to this have been in a position where somebody has really irritated you, or somebody has really got your goat on something that you're doing. And what you've done is you've had a real feeling of anxiety, and how that's manifested itself. That anxiety or stress has manifested itself because you feel a really tight knot in your stomach. You know something is really wrong, and you feel that tight knot in your stomach, or in your bowels, as some people say, and that can feel quite overwhelming, can feel quite tense, and some people that can be quite a really strong physical feeling. But you can feel that in your belly, you might feel it in your throat, you may feel it in your head. And I know when I'm coaching my clients, sometimes I get to them, you know, tell me what colors and textures do you feel right now in your stomach when you're really angry, what is it? And they'll say to me, oh, it feels like if somebody has really ticked me off, it can feel like it's really red. Sometimes it can be really dark. It can be gray. It can be blue. Other people have said to me, it's like a big bright white light that just blinds them and just makes them want to just go out there and hit people rather than because they can't see anymore. So then I start to talk to them about how can we change that color? How can we bring it down to a softer color? How can we make sure that you're not blinded by a white light, but rather you're able to see quite clearly? So when you are making a response, it's more about something that you're in actual control of. You know, when you have that feeling in your throat, Is it something that really constricts your throat, or is it something that you want to take it to the consistency of, say, lemon and honey when you're drinking that kind of medication to soothe your throat? Is there a way of being able to change it? What do you have to do? How can we focus on that emotion? And I think it's important for people to recognize that this as well, that when you are in a situation where somebody has made you angry or somebody has made you want to do something reactionary, that that's part of our evolutionary process. We are fight and flight creatures. We are either going to respond to danger or to an opportunity and think about, okay, how am I going to do this without rationally thinking through the whole process? And being able to be in that space where we start to take ownership of what those emotions feel like is important, because we should never deny it. Lots of individuals who feel that the best way to deal with anxiety or stress and what have you is, oh, I don't want to offend people and I'm just going to ignore it and push it to the back of my mind. If you're angry, be angry. If you're pissed off, be pissed off. If you're frustrated, it's important to feel frustrated. It's important to sit in that emotion and understand it exists rather than pretending it or ignoring it or trying to be just be professional and pushing it to the side. Being able to own that is incredibly important. And so for me, the marshmallow test is a good example of not just of deferred gratification, but just a way of being able to think about how do we really think about those choices that we make. How do we make sure that when we are pulling together our choices, that it's not just on impulse, but we've actually thought the process through, that we're a hell of a lot more strategic, that rather than it just being an emotive response, that we are quite logical, that we have a sense of emotional resilience and intelligence and competence around the decisions that we actually make. My wife often tells me that before I announce any world initiatives, as she calls it, and ideas, I have to be able to think it through. Do I always listen to her? Unfortunately not. There have been times I've released products and ideas and companies and I've put it out there in the world to tell people where I'm going and have to go, oh, okay, I haven't thought this through properly. And there were certain things that I needed to be able to address. And fortunately, she's an amazingly supportive business partner, friend and wife. And I've had to go back and think about that. Does that mean I will never be have impulse again? No, it just means that I have to think about it a lot more. And be very well aware of the choices that I make are not always consciously at the forefront of my mind as to why I make them. There's a brilliant book I've been reading at the moment, and it's called Predictably Irrational by the behavioral economist called Dan Ariely. And it's amazing in that book, I highly recommend it, where you understand a lot of the choices that we make and the things that we do when we're buying on impulse or when we are thinking about the choices that we make between a different products just based on price and the perception around that, a lot of that is quite impulsive. And we don't even realize that because of the message that have been pumped into our mind through advertising, through the environment we're around, through the preferences that we've built up and the preferences of individuals around us, very often that we can make impulsive decisions about it. You think about the amount of times you may have gone into a supermarket and you're at the till and there's a really great set of sweets there. You don't need the sweets, but because it's been positioned in such a way that, you know, you see the bright colors and you think, oh, I could do with a really good sweet taste in my mouth. We go and we buy it. You know, historically, I remember a lot of supermarkets, they used to have bread at the back aisles. And what they would do is they would have the bakery there and they'd be baking and the waft and the lovely smell of bread would come from the back of the room in the supermarket and grab your nose as you go in. You get drawn into that smell of the bread and then you walk past these fresh fruit and vegetables and any other things, but you walk past this stuff and you start to make purchases before you get to the bread. That's impulse. That's impulse. And unless we make a predetermined demand by a shopping list or have an expectation of what it is that we want, or you may not like bread, the truth is that these things are designed for us to be able to make purchases and choices without even having to think about it. And in the same way, when we're thinking about our leadership, there's going to be a lot of choices and impulses that we may ride on without actually thinking about it. But as I said to you before, when we're thinking about exercising self-restraint and control and being able to take time to evaluate our specific options before responding and having a sense of self-awareness of our own body, these things help us to manage impulse control a hell of a lot better. Currently, I'm coming to the end of writing the first draft of my book, which is focusing on inclusive leadership. And one of the areas that I do address is this whole concept of impulse control as part of our resilience how we build up resilience as individuals to make sure that we're not being controlled by our thoughts and our emotions, but we are more in control of that. And so that's my riff for today. I just really wanted to share some stuff around why I think it's important to have that impulse control. Go and have a look at the Marshmallow Project. Go and see it online on YouTube, or by all means, go and read the book. I think the book's available on Amazon. And there's some really interesting findings. Again, as I said, it wasn't able to be replicated with the kind of outcomes that they suggested. But if nothing else, if it sparks you to start thinking about what are the decisions that myself and my team are making based on impulse rather than actually thinking it through, maybe this is an opportunity for you to go, right, we need to have a process to go, right, we're not just going to react to the things that happen in our organization, but we're going to be a lot more proactive and intentional about the way that we do that. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Leadership Decoded. Until next week, stay safe and take care.